If you are a part of the baby boom generation, chances are your perceptions of what it meant to be gay were influenced by the media depictions of the 70s and 80s. And how did those images affect someone who was gay?
It was horrible. The things I saw, the way homosexuals were depicted in films, on TV, that sort of thing, it was horrible. It was just, I thought, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be considered like that kind of thing. That's not me. I don't want to grow up to be that kind of thing. Is this what people see when they see me? It was to internalize those images. And as children, you don't have those kind of screens. You do internalize that. I still carry that. I still worry that I'm going to act limp-wristed and faggoty kind of thing in the way that I remember seeing depicted on TV in my childhood, which just got screams of laughter and contempt from the audience. To grow up with those images, if that's who, that's how society sees you, as laughable and contemptible, it's really hard. It's hard. I still bear the scars, obviously.
Hello, I'm Roger Rocca. Today on The Human Beat, we'll be hearing the voices of three Astoria people, sharing their thoughts and feelings about being gay, then and now. Starting off our program was Drew Herzig, a gay man. Later, we'll hear from Stephanie Kilberger, a college-age lesbian woman. And right now, here's artist and poet Laura Tattoo, a bisexual woman.
During the spring when I was 35, I met a beautiful woman named Kathy. We were the same age, same height, and had a lot in common. Music, art, literature, dance. We were both healing from violent relationships. We met during a Qigong class, and one weekend, she invited me over to her house to practice. While I'd liked her before, as we moved together, there was a new sense of connection. She then revealed to me that she was gay, which surprised me, and I revealed to her that I was bisexual. From that day on, we began falling in love. Kathy came to my house often in the coming weeks. My two boys, then aged 12 and 6, adored her. She would come over late, and all of us would snuggle on my futon in the bedroom and play word games and talk, while under the covers, she and I would hold hands. It was obvious to me that my oldest son was in the middle of his first big crush, and it was totally charming. She was so magnetic, petite and extremely pretty, and so good with kids. She was a classroom music teacher, but it was obvious that she was also well off. Her house was a virtual dream home for someone such as I, who had lived all my life on the edge of poverty. Our life together was going to be beautiful. Before I met Kathy, I had had my first same-sex relationship in years with a woman named Gwendolyn, coming on the heels of a very bad divorce. It wasn't working out well, as she was very domineering and was involved in a meditation cult and talked incessantly about the assassination of John F. Kennedy. My kids both hated her. In fact, when she came to the door, my younger son, Joseph, would throw rocks at her and run to his room. Then the worst thing happened, and I say worse because it happened to me as a kid, and I remember my confusion. Joseph walked in on Gwendolyn and I having sex. Oh my God. Soon after that, I told her I didn't want to see her anymore, not because of what happened with Joseph, but because I actually didn't care for her at all. When Kathy and I were finally alone together at her house, she moved toward me to embrace me. Something inside me panicked. I told her I didn't know if I was capable of having another gay relationship because they were just too hard. I remembered the 5 years of struggle with my first wife, Milena, and our three kids, how we fought, how we felt we could never be publicly affectionate and out of the closet, how often my mother had told me I wasn't really gay, how my father had rejected me at 21 after I came out to him, and he hadn't seen me for 20 years, how Joseph had reacted to Gwendolyn, and many other episodes of my life. I told her I was just afraid. She said we should give it some time until I was sure. I felt terrible. torn between my feelings and desire to be with her and all my fear and past experiences. My feelings for her finally overtook me a few days later, and I told her, "Hey, I'm sure." Kathy said, "No, you aren't sure, but that's okay. Let's just be friends." I was totally devastated. I felt I had lost a precious person. Soon after that, in 1993, I met my partner Ron, and Kathy met an older woman who was a gay activist. Together, they built a home in Happy Valley, Oregon. When I first met Ron, my son Joseph threw rocks at him, too. Hey, it was deja vu all over again, and it was horrible. But over the years, both my sons have come to love him. And due to Ron's enormous capacity for love, I've come to integrate the many parts of myself that are loving. I still have a small photograph of Kathy around, and it makes me sad to think about it. But when my older son Paul began to express homophobic feelings, I brought that photo out, and I told him our friend Kathy had been gay. I know it helped to soften his heart, and it moved him in a new direction.
Back then, as I was coming of age, late grade school, starting high school, I knew that I was attracted to men, but there was nothing out there. There was only, and this sounds funny, but there was only Liberace, the only person everybody knew of who was not straight. And even Liberace wasn't out, but he was obviously not like everybody else kind of thing. That was our only reference point. Some more literary types had heard of Oscar Wilde. I lived in Northern California, so I had heard of a place called Finocchio's in San Francisco, which was a drag show bar. Mm-hmm. So I had Liberace and a drag show in San Francisco. Those were my reference points, and I thought, those, I don't feel connected to those. I don't know who I can be kind of thing. Even aside from the social pressure, that lack of any bearing on who am I, what is out there, what kind of adult starts being this way, was horribly distressing. It was very, very frightening for me. I didn't know what was open to me. Well, in grade school, I was attracted to men. I knew that. I didn't know what that meant. We still don't know exactly how sexual preteens are. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I wanted to be around men. I wanted them to hold me and take care of me kind of thing. So mm-hmm. it was there already, you know. In high school, that's when I realized that this wasn't something that everybody went through and grew out of. The young men in high school, they were seriously interested in girls, mm-hmm. and I wasn't. And I thought, something's not right here. Something isn't changing the way everybody else is changing. And that's when I realized that who I was and what I was, it was apparently different from what most young men of my age were. And that was terrifying, because it's, you know, people in their teens, that's when you're most vulnerable to feeling like your identity. It's all in flux. It's all malleable. And you're trying to figure out, who am I? What am I? And most of your bearings comes from your contemporaries, the people you're hanging out with. You want to fit in. You want to be like those people you're around, because that's where you feel safest and most included. And I wasn't part of that. So that was difficult. Then trying to figure out, and again, as we mentioned earlier, I had very few reference points. I knew about a drag show in San Francisco. I knew about Liberace on TV, Charles Nelson Reilly. And again, these were camp stereotypes. They weren't fully functioning adult role models for a gay lesbian youth. But that's what I had to work on, and it was very difficult. I knew I was different. I knew that I was probably not going to grow out of this kind of thing, but I didn't know how I was going to be a functioning adult in a society that seemed, where I didn't seem to exist. There was nobody else like me as far as I knew.
Can you help define that at all for people for straight people who may not quite understand the dynamic? You were attracted to men and not to women. Obviously, you have women friends. You have women that you like. You probably have women that you love in a different sense. But You know, it's not all about sex. It's also about who you want to be with and who you want to spend your time with and so on. And I think men and women are naturally attracted to each other in that way. Mm-hmm. Is there any better way to define that so people understand that?
It's really hard because for anybody, for a straight person who says, well, when did I decide to be straight? Or what is it about me that makes me straight? It's a global thing. It's not just who you're physically desiring kind of thing. It's like, who do you feel complements you? Who do you feel completes you? Who do you want to have be the other part of your greater self? Mm-hmm. When did you decide who that is going to be? That's part of the mystery of it. That's why I hate these pigeonholes of, you know, sexual orientation and this and that sort of thing, because they don't cover the fact that this feels as natural to me as your orientation feels natural to you, as inevitable as part of who I am, who I was from the beginning, as yours feels to you. That's why it's so hard to explain to people. Wasn't any different for me. I just had a different focus, but I had the same romantic feelings, the same crushes, the same fantasies about, oh, someday we'll be together kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Just a different gender on that person, but the whole romantic surround is exactly the same.
How do you answer those people, and there are those people who say, well, gay is a choice?
I have to say, when did you choose to be straight?
Right.
It seems flip, but it's that basic. It's like, did you choose to be straight? You didn't? There wasn't a box you checked at some point, say, you know, straight or gay, take your preference kind of thing. Nobody, and the second part I'd like to say, and again, that it may seem a little bit flip, but it's absolutely factual. If you can remember when you chose to be straight, I'll tell you when I chose to be gay. Mm-hmm. Second part, the assumption behind that is that there's something privileged about being gay. Why would anybody choose to be persecuted, harassed, marginalized, beaten up, killed? Why would somebody choose that? My partner and I got married in California in 2008 during that window of time. That November, the same election that President Obama was elected, California voted to deny us the right to marry. And that hurt me. I couldn't have anticipated how much that hurt me still. It felt a personal blow. And it was so hard when the rest of the country, well, at least 51% of the country, was rejoicing at the results of the election. And President Obama was saying, now more than ever, I feel we can all move forward together. I was saying, not in California, we can't. California just told me that I don't count. Mm-hmm. So I can't express how hurtful that was. And again, that was very impersonal, but again, but my marriage was considered not good enough.
Well, in some ways, things have to be better for young people now, at least in the media. Depictions of gays are more frequent and often more sympathetic. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, you have Glee with a very prominent gay character. You have The Good Wife. And the woman's brother is a gay person.
Ricky Martin came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So those kinds of things have to help. But as you said when we sort of started talking, kids are still running into some really rough situations.
Yes. Yes. It's unfortunately there's a part of our society, the far right, that sees homosexuality as sinful and evil and any number of other things, and they're vehement about that. And it seems in this country, for some reason, unlike most other developed countries, that has become an entrenched position, that there's no reaching those people, that they are absolutely sure that they know what's right and what's wrong, and homosexuality is wrong, is evil, is sinful, is sick kind of thing. Very intractable and yet very, very vocal. And that sort of unholy alliance between that belief system and some political movements has, in a sense, reinforced the negativity. It's become a platform, and I don't want to get too political here, but you understand what I'm saying. That mm-hmm. that one of the articles of faith in certain parties is that homosexuality is wrong. We will not allow homosexuals to marry, to have civil benefits, to have partner benefits, to teach in our schools, on and on and on, to adopt all the things that we have gradually claimed as part of our equal rights as citizens under the Constitution. They want to take away again, and that is frightening, because I've lived long enough to see that can happen. we can lose the rights we thought we had gained. And mm-hmm. we have lost rights. I mean, we thought constitutionally in California we had the right to marry, and that was taken away by a plebiscite. No one should ever be deprived of their constitutional rights by a popular vote. That mm-hmm. just shouldn't happen. That's unconstitutional. And yet it happens. So we're in a very strange time in our politics where people can be deprived of their constitutional rights by a popular vote. That everybody should be frightened by that, no matter what your sexuality, your ethnicity. Everybody should be frightened by that, I think.
As you try to change things here, what are some of the routes, some of the avenues you're taking? What are some of the things that you're working on to bring about change in this community?
Basically, I'm just trying to connect more dots. I'm trying to connect more people so that people know people, because it's that social surround that gives us strength. I grew up feeling horribly isolated, so that's the main thing I want to work against, so that no individual here, whether they're an older person, middle-aged, younger, child kind of thing, nobody should feel that isolated in their identity, whatever that may be. And partly that means being out there, being public and being present, so that people know that there's somebody. I may not be like everybody else, but there is somebody in that same ballpark out there. And the more people I can persuade to come out as who they are, whether they're the high school Gay Straight Alliance students or some people who have, you know, positions here, business owners, college professors, that sort of thing, the more points of light we can extend through the community, the more people can get their bearings and say, there's somebody out there like me, or I can imagine growing up to be like that person. I have a feeling of where I fit into this community. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to do in whatever way I can. But an interview like this, trying to be a publicly out person, which nobody should have to be. It's like being a publicly black person kind of thing. But nonetheless, that's what it takes so that other people can say, well, they're out there. We can be visible now.
In my sophomore year of high school, I came out to my friends and to my family. It all started when my mother had asked me out of the blue, "Stephanie, are you a lesbian?" With one simple word, I told her the truth, yes. Being a lesbian individual was not, and still is not, a problem in my life. I run my life perfectly normal like everyone else. I go to college, go out on family outings, have lots of friends, and simply enjoy life. If I were straight, my life would still be the same. Nothing would change. I want to get married and have children with my future wife. If I was straight, the only thing that would change would be the pronoun of my partner. I decided to use my talent of writing to help others come out and for straight individuals understand that gay and lesbians aren't different because they like the same sex. My best friend of 3 years and still ongoing, Anna Tiki, helped me on my LGBT writing project, Belle Rose of Paris, that is now a published novelette. Anna is my best friend who has never looked the other way no matter what I had told her. She still continues to help with my writing projects and is currently helping me with my latest novel. For me, my coming out was easy and I received virtually no hassle for it. I never got harassed or bullied and I was never disowned by anyone. I believe I was so lucky due to the combination of having loving family and friends and for having confidence. I never doubt my sexual orientation. Instead, I embraced it.
How do you feel about what just happened with regard to the military, that the don't ask, don't tell policy has come to an end and that people can be openly gay in the military now?
And the world did not come to an end. Can you believe that? I mean, it happened and the sun did not stand still. The seas did not rise. We live on the coast. There weren't any tidal waves. This is incredible. Everybody predicted the absolute collapse of our military readiness if lesbians and gays were allowed to serve openly in the military, and we seem to have managed it. I'm so happy and I'm so mad that it took this long to conquer that kind of irrational prejudice, you know, that we couldn't have stood up and said, you people don't know what you're saying. Look at Holland, look at Israel, look at Canada, look at the other integrated militaries around the world. Are they suffering? No. What makes America so different except this idiotic prejudice and bigotry? But I'm glad it's happened, and we know now that somehow the earth didn't open up and swallow the Pentagon, so I think we're okay.
I'm wondering whether a lot of people in the military who are gay or lesbian probably will still keep that quiet, even though it's okay now, just because it's more comfortable or because they're concerned about the reaction. What do you think about that?
I think it will probably be up to the individual, but I also know both from what I've heard other people and from my own personal experience, It's so much easier to come out when you finally can. You have so much more energy to go on with your life when you're not always hiding, when you're not having to double think everything. It sounds crazy to say you just jump out of the plane and pull the cord, but life is so much easier and easier to manage when you don't have to always be changing pronouns about making excuses for where is so-and-so, that kind of thing. I know that most of the people in the military, as much as possible, will be ready and eager to come out because they will be better able to do their job when they're not wasting all that energy trying to hide who they are. That applies to military, sports, you name it. Anybody who can come out safely has said, "What took me so long? I'm so sorry I wasted all that energy all those years."
And some immediately did as soon as the law changed.
And some of the people who had a discharge immediately applied to re-enlist because it matters to them. They want to be who they are. They don't want to be discriminated against, just like anybody else. I'm so sorry that there was so much suffering, so much loss to America's military readiness, because so many of the people who were discharged were people who spoke Arabic, who had language skills, who had social skills, cultural skills. We suffered a lot in those years because we drove away talent that we desperately needed to deal with situations we were facing.
If there is one thing that you could see change in the next year here, what would it be? What would that change be?
Locally, statewide, nationwide.
Well, why don't we take each of those? How about locally? Yeah. What would you like to see change right now?
Locally, I would like to see more people come out because Astoria has got a very large lesbian gay population, and we've successfully assimilated to the point where we are operating at a comfort level. We feel like we are accepted. You know, we have our successful businesses or our positions or that sort of thing. But I'd like people to be a little bit more out about it, and that sounds kind of funny, but again, I managed to get the PFLAG, Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbian and Gays. We walked in the regatta parade, and I was so happy that happened, the response from people. But we had 7 people walking. We had dozens and dozens of lesbians, gays on the sidewalk saying, "I'm so glad you're here, good for you, way to go, love makes a family," kind of thing. And I just wanted them to be out walking with us. I want to change the climate here so that those people feel they can be publicly out, whatever is holding them back, whether they feel like they've reached a comfort zone, their neighbors accept them as long as they're not too pushy about it. I'd like to change that so that people don't have to feel one or the other. You know, you don't have to make a choice between being accepted in your community and being out.
And in the broader world, what kind of changes?
In the broader world, I'd love to see same-sex marriage legalized at the state level and at the national level, kind of thing. I think that's one of the big challenges of my time, is to make sure that the full protection of the law, amendment to the Constitution, is applied evenly, so that I don't risk losing everything if my partner dies, that the same legal benefits that are allowed to opposite-sex married couples are allowed to same-sex couples. And that will have to happen both at the state and the national level. I'd really like to see that come along. It won't be the end of everything. It won't fix every problem. But imagine if you and your wife could not be legally married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just the emotional damage, but the legal, the financial, the consequences. If anything happened to you, she could not come and see you in the hospital. She could not make decisions about your care, kind of thing. If you died, she might lose the house because she cannot legally inherit. You know, there'll be huge estate taxes, all that kind of thing. There's so many implications to that that I think plus the emotional damage done, as we were talking about, when you are told you are not good enough to be considered a real married couple. There's something so intrinsically vile, nasty, and inferior about you that you would insult the institution of marriage by pretending to be a married couple like an opposite sex. That's horrible. It's horrible.
I'm a monogamous person. And what's more important, I think, than sex or the thing you're missing, you know, in a sexual relationship, there's always something missing. I mean, is the commitment, you know, the commitment to be with another person. I finally figured that out.
You mentioned something when I heard you speak the other night that I think probably doesn't occur to most straight people, or that they don't know. And you said that within the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community, that it's the dividing lines aren't only between gay and straight, but within that community. For some gays, they have trouble accepting maybe transgender people or what have you. And I don't know, as it was put the other night, not being gay in the right way. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, and that's another example of we are just like everybody else. You know, nothing makes us perfect just because we're a minority or an oppressed minority. We grow up in the same families with the same prejudices, with the same habits, belief systems as everybody else. And it doesn't change just when you realize that you're a lesbian or gay. So there is, unfortunately, considerable racism in the lesbian gay community. There's considerable sexism. There's tensions. There's the Log Cabin Republicans. It's a gay Republican organization. To me, that's just, I can't wrap my head around that. Nonetheless, they grew up as Republicans, and that hasn't changed just because they're gay. So they are, and they are actually some of the ones who are currently, they were pushing on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The Log Cabin Republicans, a gay Republican group, were some of the people who are behind these recent, you know, political positive changes. It's unfortunate. I think that there's no point in being oppressed if you don't learn to be a better person from it. Mm-hmm. But we are just like everybody else. There's still, even in Astoria, there's the tension between the gay and the lesbian kind of thing. There's a men's potluck with no women allowed. I've heard that there are women's groups, but I don't know them. They're invisible to me because I'm a gay man kind of thing. So we still play those high school games of, you know, boys club, girls club. There's a feeling that bisexuals are not really gay, not really lesbian, not really straight. They just don't want to make a choice. They have a fear of commitment kind of thing, which is ridiculous because most studies show that we are all inherently bisexual. We just, at one point or another, drift one way, like right-handedness, left-handedness, that kind of thing. Transgendered is, I think, another big issue for our time because as we are finding more and more about how this is a legitimate physical condition, that people are born into the wrong anatomy, and that is a compelling part of their identity to somehow be the person they feel they are. For my generation, where everybody assumed, well, that means you want to be a woman, we had to kind of create a lot of distance between ourselves and people who wanted to dress as women. So for gay men, that's still a very dangerous area because that's a stereotype we've had to fight against. Mm-hmm. But for the people who feel like their inner person needs to dress as the opposite sex, that's perfectly legitimate, and it's very difficult for other people to understand. Just as it's hard for straight people to understand what it is to feel naturally gay, it's hard for both of us to understand what it must be like to feel like you're in the wrong body. So that's something that we all need to liberate ourselves on, because those people need us. They need our support desperately.
I'm Roger Rucka, and we've been talking about the local lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community with Drew Herzig and Stephanie Kilberger, and we will finish as we began with the poetry of Laura Tatu.
Webster, Mass., 1972. Shuffling around this lousy town, I mixed with free radicals and crazies, left my DNA in all the wrong places. Mother scolded me about the black guys I liked. She warned me, mulatto kids have a very hard time. I strummed my guitar in the park, then played opposite Bonnie Raitt, asked her for a cool and just saved it. Shy to the max and passive, lots of guys had me, and a few women fancied me when I drank with them. One wrapped me up in her long red hair, made me sing like Bessie Smith, then winked, dissing me till I kissed her. We'd sit around one of those throwaway bars, pretending to be older divas and dons, only to be thrown out for being too loud. It was disco, Sartre, and Frisco. It was dreaming of getting out, but it was not knowing how. Smoking the last of the grass, we'd lie in the van, sweaty and hard, six legs and six arms interlocked. By summer, I was a boy. Lake Chicagagog was muddy and warm. I swam every day, cut my hair short, then hitchhiked to Boston. It was a much bigger ride there. It was too big, and I missed my friends. As the seasons changed and the chill kept coming in, I mailed myself back to Webster. Over and over again, over and over again, over and over again.